Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a barrel tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And Sydney, I am so excited.
Me too.
I'm on tenterhooks. I'm on eggshells. These are bad ones. What's a good cloud nine?
Yeah, better. I was going to say eggshell. That's not a good.
That's good. That's
I'm
not
on
a good.
Eggshell.
Today, we are joined by, I guess, kind of like an alternate universe reality. If there's a multiverse of our life experience, it's, we are joined by Will and Kristen Flannery. You may know them better as the Glockum Fleckens. Am I saying that correctly?
You are. That was great.
Yeah, nice
job. A lot of people trip over it. I get a lot of like Glockenspiel.
I said it 100 times in the mirror, so that it was worth every
second.
We did
practice.
We did practice to each other.
That's good.
Saying it in different
outside
different
of
styles.
Ophthalmology, it's an unknown term, but it's an actual medical term. I don't know.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with your all's work, especially because they email us about it regularly to say, did you all know that there's this other parallel universe version of you guys? Tell me about give me the spiel, your pitch, your overall life journey condensed as much as possible.
Yeah, well,
within
I mean,
reason.
Yeah, how far back do we go?
We'll keep it
you
short.
All had quite a winding journey. A lot of a lot of twists. We don't want to leave anything out.
Well, I was a pretty happy baby. growing up.
It was, that's great.
You know, Kristen was a little bit rough around the edges, but no, you know, we met in college and then went on to med school.
You did.
I went on to med school. Kristen was in grad school at Dartmouth. And absolutely hated it. It was like the worst experience of her life. And I enjoyed med school a little bit more than you enjoyed grad school. But anyway, we didn't start the social media stuff really until resident. I was in residency in Iowa. And by that point, we had a couple of kids. I was also had.
Well, you are really just breezing through this. I'm skipping a lot.
It's a long. I'm trying to get to the good stuff here.
Maybe you should back
kids. Get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
A few things happened in med school that were rather important.
Right. That's true. So I guess I'll back up a little bit. We had our first kid in third year of med school, my third year of med
Fourth
school.
Year.
Was it fourth year?
Yeah. One of
the years. I don't know. I took
Late
5 years.
School.
I took an extra year because, you know, I needed some extra time. But we had our first kid. And then not too long after that, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. So I had that going for me in med school. Recovered okay. And, you know, I was, as far as the comedy stuff, I had started doing that in high school. I was doing like some stand-up comedy, just amateur stuff. I never called myself like a professional stand-up comedian, even though I did make $20 once. I was very excited about that in med school. I did a little opening set at like a VFW kind of, it's just, I don't know. Anyway, rural Vermont, very exciting place for comedy. Anyway, I had the cancer thing. I recovered okay from that. Was doing some stand-up comedy stuff, not medical related stuff at that point, really. And then we went to Iowa, where I Kristen was very excited about that, excited about moving to Iowa, right?
Yeah, when he told me that was one of the programs he was interested in, which it turns out, like, it's one of the top programs in the country for ophthalmology, but all I heard was cornfields. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when he told me about it,
she was skeptical, to say the least.
I was not enthused.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I was thrilled. I was really happy to it was a great program. We went out to Iowa, Iowa City. Shout out Iowa City, Hawkeyes. And we had our second kid while we were there.
During residency. So if you are keeping track at home, we now have a med school baby and a residency baby. We're doing everything correctly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Life was, it was busy, but we were getting through it. Yeah. And Kristen was working at a Center for Gifted Education. So doing some programming stuff, some marketing stuff. And then during residency, I had cancer a second time.
So that, I have to imagine, too, I don't know if you were the kind of med student who had med student syndrome, where, like, you diagnosed yourself with everything that you learned about. Because I definitely
the opposite. Everything is fine.
That well, would, that'd for, be very, for others.
I kept imagining. I kept imagining I had things, but I didn't. And so for me, that would have been, I just can't imagine how anxiety provoking, like, oh, I was right this time. I had this fear.
And then I was right twice.
Yeah. That must have been scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I certainly at one point thought I had ALS, you know, and like all these other diseases that you learn that get stuck in your brain. I totally relate to that. But it was kind of the opposite, though. Like, when I felt this lump in my testicle, I tried really hard to convince myself it was nothing. Like, oh, that's just my epididymis.
Testicles are lumpy.
It's just a, you know, something there.
You know what, Will? Let's use the platform here a little bit. What would you, because I'll be honest with you. I think that a lot of people with testicles have this sense, or at least I do. I'll speak for myself, right? I have this sense that if there was a problem going on down there, it is solely my responsibility. I am the front lines of testicle care in this house. Essentially, since I nobody else has testicles, I'm the front lines of testicle
nobody
care.
Nobody has testicles in this house.
Yep. Our dog had testicles. We got those removed.
So no testicles
fake,
here.
Did you get the fake ones, the plastic ones that are supposed to for the dogs that are supposed to?
No.
Shark Tank that had the anyway?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a product. Okay.
Yeah, they had a zippy name for it too that I don't recall, but like, what should I be feeling for if people with testicles are worried about it? Walk me through the checkup real quick.
So I felt like it was just clearly like my testicle was growing another testicle. It was like my testicle was dividing. There was this huge. It was very hard feeling, like compared to a normal testicle, which is a little spongy, a little, you know, you could squeeze it a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
But this little give to it. That's right. But this thing that was on the testicle was very hard.
And it was small though.
It was pretty small because I caught it very early.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I guess I spent a lot of time. I was very comfortable with my own testicles, and I knew
be thorough.
Right, you got to be thorough.
Yeah, I feel like men don't need any extra encouragement to just be feeling their balls. So, you know, just while you're down there,
exactly.
Pay a little bit of attention.
That's fair. That is something you've brought to my attention before. Just a tendency to just...
Well, just sort of straighten or rearrange.
Rearrange.
Yeah.
While you're in public, maybe. While you're there, get a quick check-in. Okay, so
So the first time around, I had my testicle removed. It's called an orchiectomy. It's a very straightforward, pretty easy surgery to recover from. And fortunately, you don't really have to have two testicles for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, you got an extra there. So
it's just a little bit off balance when you walked.
Just a couple little things. Yeah, exactly.
I'll ask because everybody's wondering. Did they let you keep it?
No, they didn't. I mean, I didn't ask.
You're looking at me like I wasn't, like you weren't wondering.
I was not.
Ignore me. We'll strike that.
Some people were wondering because I do not put it past any man who has to have their testicle removed to then put it on their shelf.
Like, look at this. Look what came out of me.
I haven't dipped in my arms or something.
Right.
I mean, when I take cataracts out, people are like, can I keep my cataract? I'm like, no, it's in 1,000 pieces. You can't do that. But
it's a common question. We get that on the show a lot. People asking like, are you ever allowed to keep your appendix? Are you ever allowed to keep your gallbladder? Like, I think a lot of people do ask that.
Now, I got a dirty look from her. This weekend, during the snow that we were all suffering from.
Oh, no, don't.
Sydney was digging through her drawers, rearranging her drawers, and she just kept finding teeth.
And then I kept hearing her say, there's got to be more teeth in here. And she's rooting through, looking for more teeth.
I know exactly what this is. Yep.
Yeah, I don't have a heart to throw them away, but I had to put them somewhere where the children would never discover them.
Right.
And they just landed in my underwear drawer.
Because that's where you put all the things you don't want anybody finding.
Because they're not going to look in there. Like, they're not going to look in there. So, but they're just loose in there, which does make me look like, I don't know, a serial killer or something.
This is fewer teeth than I would expect in my underwear drawers.
You know, I just hope that your teeth and your underwear didn't get mixed up, and then it was like that movie, you know? What's the movie?
The movie teeth? Where teeth and underwear get mixed.
No, worse. Where it's
the woman has teeth in her vagina?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a movie. It's like a real movie.
It's like a horror movie.
Apparently it was very well reviewed, too.
It was old school.
I think it's called Teeth. It was
just Teeth.
Yeah.
I think it's called Teeth. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So be careful for that situation.
Yeah. Right. Watch out.
Well, no. So I don't. So I don't have testicles in my underwear drawer. They correct. Don't. I don't keep them there.
Sure.
They're in a lab somewhere. Both of them, because the second time around, I also had to have the second testicle removed, which was a more harrowing experience because I wasn't quite sure like what to expect. I had to do I bank sperm? Do I, get a prosthetic testicle? I ended up not. I'm just going ballless. And what I've learned is that testicles generally are kind of overrated in a lot of ways.
I'm like, sure.
They're great for having kids, right?
But how many times do you want to do that? You know,
right, exactly.
And all the rest of the time, never they're again. Just dangling.
Never
there.
Again
exactly.
for the rest of my life.
Twice and done.
Twice and never.
That was us.
Twice and never again.
But the supplemental testosterone. There's a ton of different options now, and so you can live a
well.
A
so for
life.
Those who aren't medical, I didn't realize because I'm not a doctor. I didn't realize how many things testosterone does. You only ever hear about it in like one or two very specific, contexts and but it's like very involved in your just overall health.
Yeah, like your mood, your energy level.
And like your bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's really important hormone and it's, easily replaced.
Yeah.
So,
Kristen, can you talk a little bit about your experience through this when you are with someone who is like a medical professional? Like, I know that when I talk to Sydney, I'm always kind of wondering like, are you toning this down? Are you making this like more comfortable for me to hear? Are you like dumbing it down so I'll get it?
Right.
Like, how did you all sort of like bridge that communication, like make that communication work between the two of you? And like, do you think that has been applicable to the work you've done since in science communication?
That's a good question. If anything, I feel like it's the other way around. Like I'm asking him questions that he's like, what? It doesn't matter. Why are you asking this inane, like very specific, detailed scientific question?
You're a very detail oriented.
Yeah.
Person.
And my graduate program, I went to grad school for social psychology and cognitive neuroscience. So I had to have quite a bit of biology and took a med school class. And I have just enough to be able to like, just enough to be dangerous, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can follow mm-hmm. along and understand, but I'm not going to know all the mm-hmm. ins and outs. But I feel like I kept up pretty well. Like even in the scan, like I was used to doing fMRIs on people's brains. So even when we went in for the scans to find out whether it was cancer or not, like I could see I could tell what I was looking at and all of that. So I don't know. I think I annoy you with the questions more than you dumb things down for me.
Well, and I was learning a lot too because I'm an ophthalmologist.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, that totally different type of ball. Like that's not the type of ball I'm normally talking about.
About the same size though.
Very similar, actually. But it was a lot of the stuff was new to me as well. So we were learning a lot of it together and like what the surveillance schedule was like and. What can expect after it? It was honestly a lot of, especially with the testosterone stuff, like that.
Been the hardest part
because a lot of it's a controlled substance, basically, and so the whole insurance and health, and that's a whole can of worms to get into, right? But it's just very frustrating. And
it's been like 7 years, I think, now of trying to find the right dose and the right delivery method to get him the levels that he needs. And in the meantime, his PMS has been like worse than mine has ever been. So, you know,
it's been more under control than right than at this point. Yes. We figured it out.
Yeah, we are finally making progress. But yeah, it was a process.
Well, what I learned from talking to my urologist, actually talking to a lot of urologists, so going to speak at different conferences, I've spoken at a couple of urology conferences, and I talked to some people who've been in practice for over 30 years, and they said they have never, one person had seen one time in their entire career someone who had two primary testicular cancers, one in each testicle.
Wow.
It's extremely rare for that to happen. Yeah. Usually it's just one, and that's
one and done.
One and done. But I had two primaries in both, which I didn't realize was as rare. And so that makes it a lot harder to get the right testosterone levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he just needs way more than most people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Because most people still have one.
Well, plus I'm trying to get huge. I'm trying to lift.
Sure. Yeah. You can see really, he's very bulked.
I'm using this to my advantage because when I'm going to be 60, like I'll have like quadruple the testosterone of my peers because I'm already on the juice. I'm already on.
They'll come to you for the juice. Do you have any extra juice?
That's right.
Tell me how to deal with the juice.
That's really interesting. I understand those struggles. I provide gender-affirming care here in West Virginia. There aren't a lot of us who do. And so I understand the insurance struggles. I know the people who do the prior auths for our state Medicaid now. Like when I call, I'm like, oh, hey, it's me again. Testosterone. Yep, right. Same old, same old. Yeah. Because I have to go through that process every single time. And it is such a struggle. And it's also an area of medicine where I feel like we're still evolving our understanding of like dosing and what is the best schedule and the best amount. And it's individualized for different patients. Mm-hmm. And so there's still so much we have to learn there. And it can be really challenging to find just the right thing for that patient.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll go to the billing department.
All right, let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the
mouth. Well, it's Mother's Day almost, and you know how stressful it is to wait the last minute, Sid.
Oh, absolutely.
What if I told you could just knock it out right now with Aura Frames?
Well, that would be such a relief.
And Father's Day, and all the other days that you got to get gifts for a special person in your life, could you do any better than an Aura Frame?
Or just because. Why wait for a special day?
That's
just
right.
Just get somebody an Aura Frame because they'd love it.
I describe it as a high-tech gift you don't need to be high-tech to use. What that means is you can set it up for this person, this grandparent, this close family friend, whoever it may be. And after you give it to them, you can use your Aura Frames app to send pictures wirelessly. I can do it in 10 seconds right now to our mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is Sydney's mom, Mary's frame. Cute picture of the kids, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're out and about. Something fun happens. Send a picture.
Maybe a cute picture of me. I'm her kid.
That's right. Yeah, she loves cute pictures of Sydney, which is all of them, by the way. This was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and by me, Justin, and her, Sydney. We love this thing. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code Sawbones at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, Sid, I want to do a quick tree check with you. How are our fast-growing trees doing back there in the backyard?
Oh, Justin, they are thriving in our backyard.
They are thriving. That's right, because fast-growing trees helped us to pick the right kind of trees for our environment and gave me on the phone free consultation when I had a question about the best way to plant them. I literally called them on the phone and I talked to a person and they told me what to do. And you cannot beat that. Not in 2024, certainly.
No. Where do you get service like that?
You buy a tree from Fast Growing Trees or a bush. They got over 10,000 different kinds of plants. 2 million happy customers. You choose what you like. They're going to get it directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, but that free plant consultation, that lasts forever. This is a great company. We have really enjoyed the plants that we've gotten. I just got a bush. I think it's called a lemonade blueberry bush, something like that.
We got two different kind of apple trees.
Oh, I can't wait for those to start producing those delicious apples that our children seem to consume at a pace that rivals a cider factory.
Like right Cooper now. Will eat the core, she not eats, a joke.
Hey, she eats the core. right now, I need every tree you all have. I need an orchard. I need fast-growing orchards. They have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants. Listeners get an additional 15% off when you use the code SAWBONES at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code SAWBONES at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code SAWBONES. Offer is valid for a limited time. Tell them we sent you.
I'm Emily Fleming.
And I'm Jordan Morris.
We're real comedy writers.
And real friends.
And real cheapskates.
We say, why subscribe to expensive streaming services when you can stream tons of insane movies online for free?
Yeah, as long as you're fine with 25 randomly inserted, super loud car insurance commercials.
On our podcast, Free With Ads, we review streaming movies from the darkest corner of the internet's bargain bin.
From the good to the weird to the holy, look at Van Damme's big old butt.
Free With Ads, a free podcast about free movies that's worth the price of admission.
Every Tuesday on MaximumFun.org or your favorite pod spot. Hello, everyone out there. Thank you for coming to our service.
Yes.
We are ready to heal you. We are Ross and Carrie. We are faith healers. Yes,
yes,
you there.
Sir, you have a spirit of...
not listening to enough podcasts.
We have the solution for that.
Oh, we can cure you.
You should listen to Oh No, Ross and Carrie. Hallelujah. Mm. It's on Maximum Fun.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yes, and ma'am.
Yes, you there. Gladys.
A spirit of boredom?
Oh my goodness, we have the solution for you. It is to listen to the podcast,
Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
Okay, and we're back. Thank you, Justin and Sydney. What an ad.
Can I say, by the way, any of our listeners, this has been very interesting to us, outside of the U.S., we started to get these emails when we had the billing department asking why did we have a billing department and what was the billing department? That was a very interesting thing as we started to do this show. Like, oh, because we bill here.
Yeah, we got to pay
for
it.
Here in this country.
It's wild. Yeah.
Here in this country, we bill you for that. And so we have a billing department. But it's very interesting to get emails like, why would a doctor have a billing department?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What are you talking about?
It would be like a firefighter showing up and be like, I need $80 or I'm not even going.
They're like, well, why do you have this?
All right, so we're in residency.
Yes, I'm in residency. I've lost both my testicles. We have two children. I have some sperm in the bank. A very expensive process, by the way. It's
sure.
A whole thing. But and then I graduated residency, got my first job, this is a job I'm still at now in Portland, Oregon, in private practice ophthalmology. Loving life. It's great. Finally done with residency. Get to start paying back all my student loans. Kristen is, you were still working remotely.
Yeah, I kept the job that I had in Iowa, pivoted to remote work instead.
And then at this point, I was starting to do the Glockenflecken thing. So that started as I was a second year resident at Iowa. And it was more just, I couldn't do stand up anymore. I didn't have time to like go and do like open mics and comedy sets and things. So I used Twitter at the time. That was really the only thing I was on as kind of a surrogate for stand-up. So I was just telling my jokes on Twitter, generating a following. Moved to Portland. And then a couple years later,
Hold on. Twitter is where the name came from because he was still anonymous at that point
He
was in residency and he didn't want to jeopardize anything.
I was afraid of ruining my medical career, as many trainees are whenever they're putting themselves out there on social media, because there weren't a lot of people that were trying to do kind of what I was doing with combining being a physician and legit like comedy, and so. I would get a lot of pushback. You know, a lot of people who were just like, "Oh, doctors, you can't be saying stuff like this. You can't be telling jokes. You can't. That's not professional." I got a lot of unprofessional accusations
from the same demographic of person for the most part. And I'll just leave you to your imagination of what demographic that was.
You know, it's just the old guard. It was that's how physicians, people are growing up revering physicians, and they're this, professional,
like a deity almost.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Put him up on a pedestal, and so to see someone like, you know, making fun of themselves and other specialties, you know, it just,
yeah, people accuse you of like, you're going to erode the trust in doctors, you know.
Listen, there's a lot of doctors on TV that are already doing a killer job of that and do not need Will's help whatsoever.
Exactly.
Dr. Oz existed already.
I mean, he exists on the planet.
Yeah.
By the time I was doing my thing. And, but it was a lot of fun. And I remember by the time I left Iowa, I had like almost 10,000 followers on Twitter. I was very proud of myself. I was like, wow, look at this. Look what I've built. This empire I've built with my 10, no other social media platform. It's just Twitter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so me and my family and my 10,000 Twitter followers, we went out to Portland, Oregon. And I kept doing pretty much the same stuff, social media wise, and life was good. And then the pandemic hit, mm-hmm. you know, and that came with all kinds of challenges. We closed down our offices, and that's when I started. I all of a sudden I had all this time on my hands because
testicles to be feeling. So
right, like, what else are there? Exactly.
Freeze up 10-20 minutes every day. Right. That's a lot of time.
What am I going to do with my? As other physicians were being like redeployed to the hospital to help during the pandemic, as an ophthalmologist, I was not asked to do that, which probably surprises
shocking,
nobody.
Right?
Yeah,
and so I started making TikToks. I started making, mm-hmm. That was like really early. That was when TikTok, I don't know if you guys remember or were on TikTok at the time, but it just blew up.
Yeah.
Because everybody's during at home lockdown. And has nothing to do.
Everybody got on. Yeah. I remember Sydney a lot of times during the lockdown, like hurriedly coming in to show me one of your TikToks mm-hmm. and showing it to me and like, it was wild, like to see you all pop up.
Well, I also really appreciated the overworked, underappreciated family doctor.
Very controversial character.
That's the character that got me into the most trouble with people.
Really?
Actually, yeah. Why? Yeah. You'd be surprised. I had a lot of when I first started making videos with that character. So this character, in case people don't know, it's a family medicine physician who is disheveled appearing, glasses askew, overworked, underappreciated. That's the point of the character. It's like, mm-hmm. look how hard this person's working and is not getting the appreciation they deserve. Well, I actually got, every time I'd put out a video with this character, I would get a couple emails from people, from family physicians saying that I was pushing med students away from family medicine. Like, I'm worsening the primary care crisis.
Oh, no. I mean, I can understand why someone would like knee jerk that, but the thing is it's the profession itself that is pushing students away and lying about it. Lying about it doesn't help.
Make it better.
Anyone.
If you don't
and I people, yeah. I mean, I try to always, because I work in academic medicine, and so I try to always be very honest with students. This is what you're getting into. And try to help them see, like, I still am glad I made the choices I made. You can find a niche sometimes, so it's not everything all the time. I don't know. I mean, I didn't take it that way at all. For me, it's celebrating that we do all this stuff. I do feel like we get undervalued a lot of the time.
And
for
most people felt that way. Like, this was just a few. It was just surprising. I didn't get that kind of pushback from any of my other portrayals of all the other specialties. Something about, and what I think it was, is just like family medicine. Primary care in general just gets stepped on a mm-hmm. lot in a lot of different ways. So I feel like just there's a little bit more sensitivity around, mm-hmm. you know, people poking fun at primary care just in general. And so so I think there was just some sensitivity there that I tapped into. But yeah, it's like I wasn't saying anything that people didn't already know. Mm-hmm. Right? It wasn't. I was just highlighting it.
And if anything, I felt like you were sympathetic to family medicine's challenges. Yeah, that's the whole character. So
that I felt like that definitely came through. And when you partnered that with your depictions of rural docs, because the entire state of West Virginia is considered rural by definition. Mm. So I work with lots of rural docs, and so with all my rural family docs, we love what you do and your depiction of what we do out there kind of with limited resources and, mm-hmm. you know,
Yeah, those are very popular. People like the rural medicine.
I love those.
Where are we at? What year? I guess we're in 2020, yes. Right?
Okay, yeah, 2020. Okay.
This is 2020.
Okay, 2020. It's like March, I think, you get on TikTok.
March, yep.
April, we get our first mortgage.
Yeah, we're in like our mid-30s
at this point, yeah. And we finally are able to buy a house.
Yeah, very fortunate. And then
May.
Is May, we went to, it was like right after Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking he's gonna be getting me some really nice gift.
No, yeah. I woke up and I found a lump in my third testicle. There was plot twist. We went to bed and
on Mother's Day,
and at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I started like gasping for breath in my sleep. It woke Kristen up. Well, you should tell the story.
Yeah, I was going to say, why are you telling?
Yeah, you were there. Like barely there. Okay.
Yeah, no. He started making these really weird sounds, and I was 4:45, so I was like being awoken from a very deep sleep, right? And so I was a little groggy and confused. First, I thought he was just snoring, so I kind of am like, you know, just quit it. Trying to push him over to get him to stop snoring, but he doesn't respond at all, which was a little unusual. So then I started like kind of like slapping trying a little harder, face. Like slap his face a little bit, not slap, but just kind of, you know, and he didn't respond to that. And so then I started getting really concerned because the sounds also were like picking up in, they sounded like, I don't know, they just had this like urgent, panicked, desperate quality to them. And so I called 911, and this is May of 2020, and he's making these like respiratory sounds. And so obviously I'm thinking this is COVID related.
Sure.
Yeah. We hardly knew anything about it at that time. Right. So, but I called 911, and I remember as it was ringing, I don't know why I did this, TV maybe, I don't know, but I put my head on his chest and it like registered that his chest is not moving and I don't hear anything.
Okay.
But it didn't like sink in. It was just like a fact, like I was going through some sort of like mental checklist from who knows where. But I called 911 and she's the one, the dispatcher is the one that told me to start doing CPR. Like I wasn't thinking anything about his heart despite just having listened to it and not heard anything. So that was, it was just so bizarre. So I did 10 minutes of CPR. I couldn't move him off the bed. He's 6'4", and I'm like 5'3", if I have my shoes on. And besides that, I have symptomatic hypermobility, and I had just had a cervical disc replacement a couple months before, and I was kind of still recovering from that neck surgery. Gosh. And so I couldn't move him and have any confidence in my ability. I was worried about whacking his head on the nightstand and making everything even worse, right? So I just did it on the bed.
This was poor timing on my part.
Yeah, it was really rude.
Very rude. I was going to say. Yeah. At least it was technically after Mother's Day because it was 4 a.m.
Yeah.
I mean, it was right, 10 right. minutes. She had 10 minutes of continuous chest compressions.
Wow. Yeah.
Which for those of you who are not in medicine, that's an extremely long time to be doing nonstop chest compressions.
Yes. Yeah. Well, like I said, we just had a mortgage and we had two little kids in the next year. You are not leaving me here.
You're not today. No.
And I guess my dead body, not yours.
And Kristen, please feel free to ignore this question if it's too tough to talk about, but how often do you bring this up in arguments? Because for me, it would be 100% of the time. Like
it's
100%.
Just a standing like a blanket understanding. I just the look I give him.
Like you don't win arguments anymore if when your spouse saves your life.
Yeah, that right has passed. You can maybe get out with your dignity. So talk to me about a podcast. How did you all like hit upon that? Where did that start?
Well, I mean, that started about a year and a half ago. You know, we talked for a while. It's like we have so many interesting things that we've experienced in life. Like we should do something. We already had I had this social media following already. It's like we could do something together. So we talked about doing a podcast, but like many things in life, it sounded like a lot of work, and so it was very easy to just like not do it.
Sure.
But then, you know, we were approached by this this group of
it was a podcast network.
It was a podcast. Well, they were building a podcast network called Human Content. That's the producers that we're with now. And they have been in the podcasting game, the media game, for quite a while, and they were starting their own thing now. So it was a group of three people, and they reached out. They'd seen my content. It was like, hey, you know, we're starting this podcast network. Do you want to, you know, do you want to talk through some ideas? And so just right timing with where we were, where they were, and we ran with it. And it's, you know, we called it Knock Knock High with the Glockenfleckens because the videos that really catapulted my social media presence were these first day of rotation videos with med students where every single video I'd go in and be like, knock, knock, hi, I'm the new med student. So that was origin of the title. And it's been a lot of fun. We've learned a lot, like, you know, doing a podcast together and just doing something that's more long form, you know, having fun. We haven't talked about divorce yet.
Yeah, well, honestly,
so it's working pretty well in terms of, you know.
Yeah, well, he actually doesn't like to talk, which is funny because now he's a podcaster. But this is the way that I get him to talk to me. It's like, you have to do it now because we're recording and people are depending on you to do this. So
yeah, I'm a little introverted by nature. So it's, you know.
So I really just trapped him into talking to me.
But I feel like we could learn a thing or two from you guys. I mean, you've been doing, how long have you guys been podcasting?
The 11 years this June.
Yeah, that's so, like, early on, you
seem like reasonably happy with each other.
We used to do it. Well, when we started, we were doing a TV podcast called The Satellite Dish. Well, before that, it was a 2.5 Men review show hosted by people that hadn't watched until Charlie Sheen left the show. So we started with Ashton Kutcher. It was called Losing the Sheen. We made it eight episodes before we were like, I don't want to watch 2.5 Men anymore, sweetie. So we did a TV podcast for a year after that called Satellite Dish. And then we got into the medicine.
And maybe that was... I guess it was residency is what made that, because I would have been in residency at the time that we were doing that. Yeah. And that was one, I didn't have time to watch TV. And two, kind of what you alluded to earlier, I was trying to be careful about what, like, the me that we were putting out into the world while I was simultaneously going through my training. And so Sawbones was like the perfect solution for that. Like, we'll do this show that's very, like, it's buttoned up in that way. We're talking about medical history. Right. We're making jokes, but it's fine. It's professional.
Mm-hmm. Have you all gotten to the point yet in working together on something like this where you, and I'm cheating a little bit, I know, because I heard you talking about it on a recent episode, where you realize that as the two co-hosts and also the two co-parents, you have no... There's no backup plan for any of it. Like, you were talking on the show about getting a note slipped under the door, which was cracking me up because we, like, literally the day before with the snow day, similar, like, scenario, we told our kids, like, if you just go to the playground, just go play for a half hour. If you could just play for one half hour, we will literally give you anything you want. Right. Like, we'll do anything, just one half hour.
We'll even cave on screen time. I'll, like, hand them an iPad. Yeah. Like, just watch the YouTube videos that I wish you weren't watching because I don't think they have educational value. Just watch them. Go for it. Oh, watch the unboxings.
Yeah. How do you balance? How do you balance everything?
There's a lot of bartering.
Yeah.
So I definitely relate to that.
For sure.
It's gotten easier as they've gotten older. Now.
Well, and I think it helps.
You have younger kids than we do. Yeah. And so, I mean, if we were trying to do this when they were like five,
pause because we did. Not podcasting, but I have been working remotely since 2017 from my home, and we did virtual kindergarten in that time period. And that was when, like, I had someone else as a boss, right? So I had to, you know. So I think that helps a little bit, as they're just so used to it. I mean, the young one, that's all she really knows. She was two when I started working remotely. So we've had to set a lot of ground rules for, like, what it means when this door is closed and what you can do, what you can't do, where you go if you need help and we're not available, you know, whatever. And by help, I mean, like, they want a password or something.
Unless
they
bone is showing, you don't interrupt us. That's, I don't know.
Right. No, but But yeah, that I think that helped. We had some ground rules set to begin with, and then yeah, now they're older and they understand what a podcast is, and you know, can
sometimes they'll still like the bust in though, and like you know, we have to redo something, right. But it happens.
Our problem is our kids really want to be on them now, especially our oldest. Yeah. She wants to be on the, she wants to do her own show. She wants to be on the show. She has great ideas. She'll bring me ideas for Sawbones. Like, we don't need daddy
for this
one.
Well, it's the family business for you all.
Sure, yeah. Right. Yeah, they might as well learn the trade, right?
Right.
Exactly. Put them to work. You know, starting them IRA. There you go.
Right. There we go. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you've been in the TikTok games you were kind of alluding to pretty early. Like I'd say an early adopter, somebody who bubbled up pretty early. It is a platform that is, from my perspective, and we've only really made a push trying to like make more of a push into it in the past year or so. It seems like the platform is almost like the most, what do I want to try to say? It seems like the most notable thing about TikTok is how inscrutable the algorithm is and how quickly it evolves. Like, yeah. To what extent are you, as a content creator, trying to, like, anticipate that and stay ahead of it? Or is it just more about, like, making algorithm. What feels... Yeah.
I don't. In fact, probably to a fault. Like, I don't think about the algorithm at all. Mm-hmm. I literally... And that's the thing. Like, you'll see... As this happens with all social media platforms now, but particularly with TikTok and YouTube... You'll see people make videos about like, well, what's best for the algorithm? How do you, and Mr. Beast, who's like the biggest, you know, content creator in the world.
We know Mr. Beast in this house. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like
Jimmy to
that's right.
His friends that have been forced to watch all of his videos 100 times. Jimmy.
Like he has gone into detail about like how he like obsessively has tried to tinker with his content, his thumbnails, whatever it is to appeal to the algorithm, and you can see the effect it has, right? So you can do it. It obviously it works, but I don't have the bandwidth to like I could barely just make content and I have time to do that. I feel like I have time to do that because I, you know, I still work 4 days a week, you know, as an ophthalmologist, so I still have that career,
which as an ophthalmologist is in fact full time.
That's full time as an ophthalmologist. Absolutely. And so, no, I really don't think about the algorithm much at all. I make what I think is fun content to make.
Yeah. And it's always just been his hobby, and it just sort of accidentally became big. And then we were like, well, I guess we have to do something with this behemoth that we now have. Mm-hmm. And so then we like turned it into a business, and I'm running the business side of things and the marketing. And so I'm always like, hey, what if you did whatever, like this is trending or what? And he's like,
like
no.
Maybe you actually should have a YouTube thumbnail instead of just some random screenshot from your video, which is exactly what I do, what I have been doing. And, but it's, yeah, it's been a, I didn't get into this, be like, oh, I'm going to make this a career.
Right.
It was, it really was my creative. It was a surrogate for doing stand-up because I love making people laugh. And once I started making the videos, like, oh, this is a whole creative outlet that I could really run with. Not a lot of people are doing this in medicine. I feel like I came along at the right time for video content.
Yeah, a lot of it was just dumb luck.
You know, I mean, which timing. Is like a lot of the opportunity and, you know, so it's...
Well, I think it's interesting. Yeah. My job wouldn't have existed when I was... Like, I didn't want to do what I do when I was a kid because it didn't exist, right?
Right.
And I feel like it has allowed people to make I'm able to make a living making a much more specific type of humor and more specific type of content than I ever could have, you know, 15, 20 years ago, right? Like,
right.
I don't have to be, you know, the Smothers Brothers, like doing something that appeals to like a huge wide range of people. I can make something pretty specific that I know is going to hit with a certain number of people that I think is only allowed, like only the internet has allowed us to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
And it helps, I don't know, it's helped me from getting burned out.
Sure.
Doing all this stuff to be able to continue just doing the things that I find interesting, you know, and I not doing it because like when I make a skit or something, I'm not thinking, oh, the people are going to love this. It's something like I think this is funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make this and I hope people like it. But it's really like an outlet for me and people just happen to really enjoy it. And so it's and I think that's the key is like. And what I tell people, you know, when people ask me, like, how do you get started doing this social media stuff?
We're like, I don't know.
Like, well, yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, I don't know. I don't know how it happened, but there's a lot of like, you gotta do it for yourself first and foremost, because then it's just going to be like a chore, you know?
Yeah, that's 100% true. That's, I mean, when we finally settled on the show that we've been doing for a long time now, it was because I was really interested in, we didn't learn any medical history in my med school. We knew like nothing, like occasionally get a little anecdote, nothing. So it was something I wanted to know about. It was some, we love just, I don't know. I love telling Justin about stuff I learn and him making jokes about it. Like that was just, it was natural. It was this sort of offshoot of what we were already doing. So I really think that's the key. And then you'll kind of select for people who are like, oh, I also love that. And then you can kind of build that relationship with that audience over time.
But I would love to know from you, Kristen, you all been hosting the show now for over a year. And you talk to a lot of people in the medical profession and adjacent to the medical profession. Are there conversations that you feel like you wish people were having more surrounding medicine or things you wish people knew, more people knew that they should be, that you wish more people were talking about?
It sounds to me like you're asking me what my soapboxes are, and let me tell you, I have so many.
Okay, great. Please.
Okay. We have this, and I guess, have a odd perspective, having been adjacent to medicine this entire time, right? Like, we met in college before he was even in med school, and then I was along for the entire ride. So I had this kind of, like, insider-outsider perspective of, you know, what goes on in medical training, what goes on, you know, in medical education, what goes on as a practicing physician. And then on top of that, we have the patient side. He's been a patient of some serious things. I am a patient of some serious things. And then, you know, I have this piece that I call it a co-survivor of his cancer and his cardiac arrest. Because, you know, those things, and same with med school, anybody who's been partnered with somebody in med school or even as a practicing physician, you know, all of that stuff happens to you too, you know, and that is not really talked about. So that's really my main, like, goal in using any kind of platform that we have is, for me, is just pointing that out, that those people are there and they have, you know, needs to, and they are affected by the medical system in many ways, you know, just as intensely as the med student, the resident, the patient, the, you know, you know, the specifics are different, but it happens to them too. So that's one thing. Another thing that I really just have always harped on is just, you know, before you are a doctor, right, you are a human. And I saw that goes all the way back to watching him go through med school, because I saw that they are learning how to take care of human bodies and they are not allowed to take care of their human bodies. You know, like you don't go to the bathroom all day. You probably have to skip lunch. You're not drinking any water because you can't take a break to go to the bathroom any day, all day. And, you know, they're not getting enough sleep and there's all this stress and there's, you know, just all the expectations of the medical training system on them. And so I always had to remind him, like, hey, it's okay if you have a human need, because guess what? You're a human, you know, like the system you're in is going to tell you that's not okay, but let me remind you that it is. And so I do that too. I wish people would talk more about that. And that's a big part of what we try to do together too, is just highlight the humanity in medicine, whether that's, you know, on his side, it's kind of the humanity among physicians and nurses and other kinds of clinicians. And for me, it's for, you know, the patient and family side of things. But
it's one of the best things about ophthalmology. I get unlimited bathroom breaks.
That's true.
Like I can, as whenever I want, I can go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And so
I'm very jealous of that. I don't have that.
Before we let you go, Will, I just want to tell you, I'm 43 years old. Everybody in my family has glasses, and I don't. So I guess I'm wondering, like, how cool am I? I guess would be the question. Or, like,
you're very,
it's like
cool.
An amazing medical.
You're a medical marvel, my friend.
Marvel. That's a good. You're a miracle.
Have you considered that your father is not your father? I'm just going to throw that out there.
No, he's on podcast. Anybody who's listened to the podcast that he is on with us has zero doubt that he is, in fact, my dad to a fault, yeah. I think, if that's something.
Yeah, if the looks don't give it away, the sense of humor.
Yeah.
I am also a non-glasses wearer.
Yeah, though. He likes to rub that in a lot.
Which is unusual.
He has never had an eye exam in his entire life.
It's not,
That is true. He's going to tell you it's not true. Yeah, it is true.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, are you sure you don't need glasses?
Right?
Just compensate.
That's what I'm saying.
I see just fine.
I don't need glasses.
Thank
I just love to stand close to words.
Because when I'm just going to say, when I got my glasses in sixth grade, I remember the first day I went back to school and went, oh, you all could see the board. I wonder why they put stuff up there. I couldn't see it, and I assumed nobody could see it. And I just thought, well, it's so weird. Teachers write stuff up there. Nobody can see that.
Leaves on the trees. When I got my, I was like, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
There's like individual leaves up there, not just a big green clump.
My personal statement for ophthalmology is like, I have perfect eyes and I want other people to have that joy.
So we've already talked about the podcast. We are going to be appearing on an episode of the podcast so people can check that out. Where can people find more of your work?
So you can find, we're on pretty much all the social media platforms. You can just search for Glockenflecken. It's spelled like it sounds. It's easy. Just Glockenflecken. So everything can be found on our website, glockenflecken.com. We have a newsletter, which is, we just launched that not too long ago. It's very exciting because it brings in all the stuff we're working on. So all the skits that I've posted recently, the podcast, we go into some deep dives on some medical related topics as well. So if for people that want more email, you can sign up for a newsletter.
I just felt like he was putting his face too many places. I was like, we got to just make it a one-stop shop for people if they want to see your stuff.
Exactly. And then our podcast and Knock Knock High with the Glockenfleckens. And we have interviews with people. That's what we do once a week. And then I also do these Knock Knock Eye episodes where it's just me and I go into, I pick a topic, some random eye-related topic, and just nerd out for about 30 or 45 minutes. So
I've been very surprised at how many questions people have about eyeballs and how many people are willing and want to listen to eyeball stuff. Yeah. I gotta admit, like I thought that was gonna be a flop. Like
I heard on one episode, Will, you saying like you were incredulous that people listened to the show during their work commute. It's honestly, man, I've listened to a lot of podcasts in my life. It's the first time I've ever heard a host say, "What are you doing here? What are you doing? I have to make this. You don't have to listen to it.
What are you doing with your life?"
Will, Kristen, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you check out all the Glockenflecken's work because it is, if you like this show, I mean, you're pretty much as close as we can get to perfectly selected to enjoy everything they make. So make sure you
absolutely
check it out. That is going to do it for us for this episode. Will and Chris, anything you all want to plug before we head out? You just did some live shows. Is that right? Or you're going to do?
Yes.
Yeah, we did a little test run of live shows in Southern California. And basically, it's called Wife and Death. And it's a comedic tragic comedy
multimedia stage show.
That's right. Ooh. And so we're planning, it went really well. Had a great response from people. We're planning on going around the country at some point. It's kind of in the works. So
come on out to West Virginia.
We're working on 2024 dates right now. So those will be up on our website once we have them.
Exactly. And thank you so much for having us, you guys.
Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thank you again to you for listening. We sure appreciate it. If you want to pass along the show to somebody else, sawboneshow.com is the URL. If you want to send us an email at sawbones@maximumfun.org. That is going to do it for us for this week. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows, supported directly by you.